And we're also speaking in the wake of the killing of Renee Nicole Good, who is not the first person to die at the hands of an ICE agent. What are the procedures that should happen, if we're talking about oversight, in the wake of an incident like this?
Historically, there were lots of layers of oversight that existed and that would have gone to work after an incident like this. And many of those layers have been stripped away. There have been lots of questions raised about the criminal investigation, given that that's now being handled by the FBI. Minnesota authorities have been cut out, and the administration already seems to have rendered its verdict in that investigation before any evidence was even collected.
The idea that Tim Walz and a bunch of radicals in Minneapolis are going to go after and make this guy's life miserable because he was doing the job that he was asked to do is preposterous. The unprecedented thing is the idea that a local official can actually prosecute a federal official with absolute immunity. I've never seen.
And below that,
like
the additional
that
layers have been really significantly kind of kneecapped.
Right. So it seems like all the kind of mechanisms, the apparatus to hold ICE to account if things do go wrong are being hollowed out. At the same time, as you mentioned, you have this kind of quite extraordinary response from the Trump administration in the hours after the killing of Renee Good, where they basically came out and said it's her fault. She's a domestic terrorist.
And she attempted to run an law enforcement officer over. This appears as an attempt to kill or to cause bodily harm to agents, an act of domestic terrorism.
And seemed to suggest that the ICE officer involved would have complete immunity.
It's very simple. You have a federal law enforcement official engaging in federal law enforcement action. That's a federal issue. That guy is protected by absolute immunity. He was doing his job.
What did you make of that response?
I can't think of a time where I've seen the federal government render such a clear verdict before the evidence has been gathered. I mean, it just falls outside of the expectations that we have as Americans for how criminal investigations work in the United States. So it's not something I've seen before. I think there is real cause for concern given what we've heard.
So it kind of seems like the guardrails are off. Does this mean that ICE agents can act with almost complete impunity on the streets?
You know, I'm sure if you asked the Department of Homeland Security that question, they would say no. But I think that there's a message that is being conveyed to officers. I've spoken to so many ICE agents who've told me, you know, historically there was a lot of fear around discharging a weapon because they knew how much accountability would be involved. They knew, you know, it's a hard job, and to make these split second decisions isn't easy. No one would want to be put into those shoes. But in general, these officers told me historically, you know, you would lean toward, in a split second decision moment, lean against using your weapon because of the, of course, the consequences on the human life involved on the other side of that weapon, but also the fact that they knew there was going to be a lot of scrutiny on such a choice. And that feeling no longer exists because of the message that Kyrstie Noem and that President Trump are sending.
We're only a year into the Trump presidency. What do you think is next for ICE?
The polling suggests that the country is turning away from the way that this enforcement effort looks, that they believe that ICE is going too far and is being too aggressive and that this isn't what they voted for. And so I think if those poll numbers become compelling enough in the direction away from the administration, I think that they will change their strategies because, of course, they want to maintain support and power. But I think there's a reason why 70 million Americans who voted for Donald Trump, some now feel that that ICE is going too far. When Donald Trump was running for president, he really emphasized that he was going to focus on hardened criminals. You know, he would use this language and talk about illegal monsters and talk about rapists and murderers and really made it seem like that was going to be the focus of his deportation effort. In reality, more than 70% of people who are in ICE custody and who've been detained since Trump became president have had no interaction with the criminal justice system whatsoever in the past. You know, these are not necessarily people who just arrived in the United States. The average undocumented immigrant has lived here for 16 years. There are millions of American citizens who have an undocumented parent, almost 2 million who have an undocumented spouse. So there are lots and lots of Americans who are being affected by this, lots of communities who are being affected by this, and who feel like this is not what they were promised when they voted for the Trump administration.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, that kind of widening of that net, isn't it? Like you're going to, it's almost like there aren't enough hardened criminals to meet that target. And so you start expanding that net outwards.
That's exactly right. So to get the numbers up, you have to expand the net and start to arrest people who the public generally seems to believe should be left alone, if not offered a pathway to legal status.
Which, of course, many of them don't, right? I mean, this is the central twist point in this, isn't it? That all of these people that they should be here legally, in many cases, it's just not a possibility for them to apply for legal status.
Yes, and thanks for asking that. That's a really good question. The vast majority of people living in the United States without legal status have no legal pathway to convert to either a resident or a citizen status. And if they could, most would like to do that. I mean, people want to live with rights and protections under the law, but there is no way to do it.
And I've got kind of one last question for you. We've kind of heard of ICE being described as Trump's private army, this kind of idea that ICE's powers could, in some scenarios, be expanded out so it could become almost like a militarized arm of the Trump administration. Can you ever see that becoming a reality?
I mean, I think the fact is that there's a lot of concern about a large federal law enforcement agency that's armed and that's turning against not just unauthorized immigrants, but also the general public. You know, as I've mentioned, it's unprecedented to personally serve Trump. You know, it's not something that we've ever seen before in American history. I can't imagine under the law how it would happen. You know, I want to acknowledge that we are in unprecedented times, but that is a scenario that is just difficult for me to imagine. We'd like to hope that the rule of law maintains its significance and the way that it governs our lives.
Catelyn, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a really fascinating conversation and kind of in extraordinary times. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Catelyn Dickerson and Manvi Singh. You can read all of our reporting on ICE and the ongoing situation in Minnesota at theguardian.com. This episode was produced by Ruth Abrahams, Eli Block, and Isaac Tompkins, and presented by me, Annie Kelly. The sound designer was Brian McNamara, and the executive producer was Homer Khalili.